Okay, Erev Tov, we continue in the Rambam Morah Nevuchim, section 1, chapter 73. Yesterday we did 6 of the main points of the Mutakalim, or whatever you call them. Okay, and very quickly, the first 6 were atoms exist and make up everything, vacuums exist and are the stuff between atoms, time is atomic, every moment is now. Every substance must possess accidents. That's attributes that are put into it. These accidents reside in the atoms. So when these atoms came into existence, they came for this moment with this accident, with this, attribute. And each accident exists only for an instant. Okay, good. So now those are the first 6. Six.
Now
we're going to move on to the next. On this sheet, it's the next 4, and if we finish that, then we go to the next sheet, they'll give us the next 2. Remember, yesterday's sheet gave us 12 bullet points, but now you got the 4 are expanded. So we go to point number 7. Just as positive attributes are created accidents, that we already accepted. Created meaning God makes it happen one time with an attribute, with a an atom that has a unique characteristic for that moment. Now here's the chiddush. So are privations of attributes created constantly. So let me explain what the normal way of looking at things are so you understand his abnormal explanation. What he's saying does not make sense. But first you have to know what makes sense. Well, we know that there's a positive attribute. Let's say you say something's in motion. Okay, that's positive. The thing is moving. Now, what would you say if it was lacking motion? You'd say it's at rest and it's withdrawn. In other words, that which was happening stopped happening. Right? That makes a lot of sense. That's the normal way of looking at things. That would be scientific observation.
That's not this.
You see, it's moving. Stop moving. Now, is stopped moving an attribute? No, it's a lack of the attribute of moving. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Could be the attribute of inertia. No.
The what? No, it stops. It stops.
What is about moving? That's one of Newton's laws.
What about?
Object will stay inertia. It just sits there unless other force is applied to it.
Okay.
Keep moving if it's moving, unless another force is.
So, but the fact that it's not moving means there's the absence of movement.
Okay.
That explains why it's not moving, because it has no movement. But he says not like this. So just like attributes are created accidents, when it's moving, it's moving. So are privations of attributes created constantly. It's not moving is created every moment. Okay, so even the negative of the attribute is imbued with a quality of nothing. And now he gives examples of this. The state of rest is not a privation of motion, but rather God imbued it with restfulness.
At that moment.
At that moment, God is giving it an attribute of not moving. The state of death, how would we look at death? The privation of life. No. It is imbued with deafness. Okay? The state of blindness is not a privation of sight, but rather it's a lack. It is imbued with blindness. And the state of ignorance is not a privation of knowledge, but it's imbued with a lack of knowledge. So there's something, Hashem is still, God or whatever, is still doing something that it does nothing. That's also a doing, so to speak. Now, that is very unusual.
There's a lot of challenges with these definitions.
So I think here's the challenge. How long, let's say, okay, so we're saying death is not a privation of life, but God imbued it with deadness. How long does he imbue it with deadness?
Forever. It looks like it's there for a living.
Okay. The challenge, how long does the accident of death exist in a decaying body? Right?
What about
fossilized remains? Yeah. So this is the idea of the absurd conclusions. Mm. Because some privations do not need to be imbued with anything. Right? So therefore, that's a challenge we have with this shita. Okay, now Ada kind of spoke out in number one, but this is just fleshing it out a little more. Eight, the atoms throughout the universe are the same. We said that yesterday. All differences in substances are not innate, but are rather due to different accidents. Okay? Which we said where God, for this moment, gives it red hair. Right? That's an accident. That's an attribute. While the Rambam differs from that, and he says, some things have innate qualities versus extrinsic qualities. In other words, science says it is an innate quality. Certain atoms are innate. Hydrogen is different than oxygen. That's all there is to it. And some of the qualities are innate. It's if I don't have it, it's not a flower. Like, to be a flower, you have to have some innate structure to be a flower. Then we could have some extrinsic qualities, a red rose, a pink rose, a white rose. But they have to have some intrinsic qualities to make it happen. While he is saying, no, it's just accidents. So that define, like science looks at things, what do I know about this object? What are its qualities of this object? And they're saying, they've got no qualities at all. It's all accidents. It's not an inherent quality. So that's a big difference. Nine, no accidents depend upon another, but each accident occurs independently. Okay, so for example, if I would show you, you have a hot cup of hot chocolate, and steam is coming out of it. Okay, I'm going to ask you, where does the steam come from? It's not a trick question. It's not a trick question. Because the chocolate's hot.
Chocolate's hot chocolate.
So now, there's two things that we could say about it. It's hot and steamy.
Yes.
What's the relationship between hot and steamy?
Well, it depends how hot it is.
It's hot. It's hot.
It causes the evaporation.
No, no, no. What's the relationship between the fact that the coffee is hot and that the coffee is...
It can't be steamy unless it's hot.
Oh, so the heat is the cause of the steam. Now, wouldn't you say that's what science would say?
Yes.
So what does the Calamus say?
They don't say that
He says the two are two separate accidents that just so happen to be at the same time.
Really?
The atoms are parv.
Right, the atoms
Now, there's two accidents that happen at the same time. One accident is it was hot, and one accident is that it became steamy, and one has nothing to do with the other. And that's what he says. A, there's no causality whatsoever in the Muta Kalam philosophy.
Can't be.
Okay? And have one accident the source of another, if that would be, that forces the chronology of the first accident to precede the second. Thus necessitating the first accident to exist for longer than one moment, which is impossible.
According to
them, everything's just an instant. Remember, that's like atoms are just small, so it's time. So if it's hot for a second, and you want to say that makes the steam, that means it's got to be hot for more than a second.
Yeah.
And therefore they suggest, no, it's two separate things that are coming in. Now, you're going to see the Rambam is going to tell us at the end of the whole thing. Rama says at the end, he says the Mutkalim need all 12 of these principles to work because they all work together and really they all end up to the last one of number 12 as we'll get, when we get to 12. But you're going to see how these are all feeding into each other. Okay? And now we come to the second major one. Remember we said 6 was a big one. Each action exists only for an instant, meaning there's no past, present, and future. And then there's no free will choice. That came out of 6. So what comes out of 10? Anything imaginable is possible.
Flying coppers and flying horses.
Okay.
In Arabian Nights.
The flying elephants. Whatever.
Exactly. Arabian Nights.
Now, why are they saying that? Because God can do anything.
Exactly.
And at any moment, because if there's no such thing as nature, there's no science, and everything is a complete brand new miracle, so God can do whatever he wants at any time. And that would not be surprising at all. Okay, here we go. This is the primary premise of the Mutakilim, and why the other premises are put forth in order to lead to this conclusion. You see, everything up to now leads to this conclusion. We would say that the Mutakalim are they're maximalists in belief that miracles can happen at any given time. There's no rhyme or reason for what's going on. Now, why they're saying that is because if you're going to say, like the scientist, that there are confined rules of nature, then that would confine God. That's what they're suggesting. While Rambam says, no, God created the confined rules of nature. But if you're going to tell me that nature is stuck in its place, then God can't do anything about it. Right? Now, the scientists will say, well, there is no God. There's some power, but that's all. So what's the difference if that power is confined? So what? It's not a creator. But if you're a religionist saying there's a creator, then creator's got to be able to do anything. So how could there be nature that sticks to an order? They couldn't accept that. And therefore, anything imaginable has to be possible. B, just as social conventions can be violated, right, so can rules of nature.
You can imagine.
That this can only be positive if there's no such thing as intrinsic attributes. Like science says, there's intrinsic attributes. Water has certain attributes. Hot has certain attributes. Hot rises. Cold sinks. Those are rules that can't be changed. Right? But that's called intrinsic attributes. They're saying, no, there's no such thing as intrinsic. So that ultimately something can be a human being in one moment and then become an insect the next. Which Rambam suggests is quite bizarre. Okay, it's quite bizarre. But that could be. And now Rambam says, so what is this? So really they're basically saying whatever you can imagine could be. Because if you can imagine it, then obviously it can be. Can't imagine things that can't be. And God could do that. So the Rambam says, no, imagination is not a reliable faculty. And he gives two reasons why not. Let me tell you the following. Let's imagine now, okay, you've got planet Earth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, planet Earth. There's a guy standing up here on this side of the universe. Here's the world. Man standing. Let's find what are two polarically opposite places on the planet. But that's such an easy one. Okay, let's say North Pole, South Pole. Okay, so guys standing on the North.
Here in Perth, Australia.
Okay.
Pretty opposite.
Okay, good. So now we're standing here. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm standing. Let's say I'm on top over here, mm-hmm. and the guy in Perth, Australia, is standing over there.
But he's upside down.
Wait, he'll have to fall.
He's upside down.
He'll have to fall, won't he?
No, they scrape their heads.
No. He'd have to fall.
Flat Earth.
He'd be flying out. Right?
Oh, no.
So two people on opposite ends of the Earth are both right side up. That can't be. Why? Because there's something called gravity. So things unimaginable, right? They're saying whatever you can imagine can exist. That means if you can't imagine it, it can't exist. So how can you imagine two people standing on opposite sides of the earth and someone doesn't fall? I can't imagine that. And they say, if you can't imagine it, it can't be. So Rambam says, oh yes, you cannot imagine that, but it could be. Why? Because of something called gravity. And the opposite, okay, things impossible to exist can be imagined. I imagine that Shelley's going to fly right out of this room and fly straight to the moon.
Ooh, the moon, Superman.
in one shot. All right. I imagined it, but it ain't never going to happen.
Why not?
So these conjured images do not represent reality. And that's going to lead to something very, very important. Now, let's go, just turn the page. Talk about this thing about imagination. And this is from a secular text from Aaron W. Hughes. The textual divide, imagination in medieval Islamic and Jewish thought. Polishing a dirty mirror, the philosophical imagination. So let's vision. Okay. Now we're going to see what we're going on to understand. There's two faculties we have. We have an intellectual faculty and an imaginative faculty. The intellectual faculty uses logic. The imagining faculty conjures up images. Now, the imagining faculty can conjure up true images, or false images. So now let's read. I didn't read yet. I was just I was just introducing it. Vision. Let's take a look at vision. The strongest of our senses is central to our engagement with and in the world. Without vision, we encounter the world in only two dimensions and are able to process the fullness of the world in all its richness and diversity. Since the currency of the imagination is images, its main activity is often associated with a type of visualization. This vision, however, is not external and directed toward what physically exists before us. Rather, it is internal, bringing into existence that which is no longer present. What does that mean? I can see you. Mark. I can go out of the room and I can still see Mark. Can't I?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he's not here.
No. Well, he's not there. He's not in the hall.
Okay. So it's not really, I'm not really seeing now what really exists, am I?
No.
No, because it's now in my brain over here. Right? So it's not external and directed toward what physically exists. Rather, it's now internal. The picture of Mark is now in my brain, and Mark can be on the moon now. But it's in my brain. Rather, it's internal, bringing into existence that which is no longer present. For this reason, the medieval thinkers often refer to the imagination as the inner eye. The imagination is thus a creative faculty responsible for the formation of images of things or concepts that senses have apprehended but are now no longer visible. So now what that means is, so your imagination could take 10 separate images and recreate a non-real image. Couldn't I?
Yeah.
I could look at all five of you and I'll create your head, your chest, your arms, your legs, your toes, face. but that doesn't exist. No, let's say one's a black person, one's a white person, one's an oriental person, one's a man, one's a woman. And you could create a very interesting creature with all those images. This presenting of the absent is both the blessing and the curse of the imagination in the history of Western philosophy. Because of its ability to make the absent present, many philosophers in both the ancient and medieval worlds regarded this faculty as unreliable and unpredictable, responsible for the formation of inauthentic expressions. That's what the Rambam is criticizing the Calamists for. For example, the image of a beautiful object is not the same thing as the object itself. All right? Here's a beautiful object. Okay? I see the beautiful object. But it's not as real as the beautiful object, is it? No, but more than this. All right? Which in turn is a pale imitation of a formal and incorporeal beauty. This is representing even a more exciting beauty, the beauty of the one who created it and the mind that he had when he created it. Now, this wasn't a good example, but if I had a mamish, a sparkling, a real beautiful sculpture.
Yeah, a picture of it versus the actual sculpture.
Okay, a picture. Okay, beautiful, mamish, the Mona Lisa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, is the Mona Lisa the Tzura or the Chomer? I see it, but what was behind that? It was the painter's mind and what he really felt it was.
Well,
remember they talk about, I have no idea how they do this, but you know, you go to these art galleries,
yes,
they look at these things, what was the artist thinking? What is he expressing with this? Well, lost love.
Lost love.
Yeah, let's say the Mona Lisa was a woman who was afraid to commit herself to a relationship.
Really?
And just gives you that little smile. Oh, there's so much behind that. The one who drew it knew exactly what was going on. So even what you see isn't the real thing. And now I got the picture in my mind. It's two times removed from the real thing. Right? Twice removed from the really real. For reasons such as this, philosophers distrusted the productive, or I don't know, mimetic aspect of the imagination in a system that gives priority to intellection. Production must always be derivative. To imagine something, then, is secondary or even tertiary and inferior to our ability to encounter it physically, such a matter we can say and know it. In other words, let's observe and see what it really is and take it apart and look at it and weigh it and measure it and this and come to determine what is it? No, I just got a picture of it in my mind. And I'm imagining what it is. No, we don't have to imagine. We could weigh it. We could find principles about it. We could say if it flies, if it sinks, if it this and if that. So this is what the Rambam clearly is on this side, that he is not happy with this at all. Okay. We could stop it here, and I think maybe better, because the next page is going to take a bit of time.
Okay. Is that it? This is the Pesach break?
Pesach break, so we're going to resume at 173, part 4, and that will be the end of chapter 73, and it'll be good Chazara.
This is a good example.
Yeah.
What?
Rabbi, in our house, we had a model of the Taj Mahal,
yeah,
and I think I was probably 9 or 10, but when I saw it, I couldn't imagine something can be so big, but I still remember that when I was 9.
Did you see it in real life?
Yeah.
You saw it live?
When I saw it live, I couldn't imagine, I always imagined it would be small.
Yeah.
It's like a building.
It's hard to get inside the model.
Okay, excellent. Okay, I have a chag kosher with Samantha.